Hello, I'm Margaret Shuring from the School of Theatre, Performance and Cultural Policy Studies at the University of Warwick. In 1989, with Ronnie Mulrine, I compiled and published a book on the first three seasons of productions in the Royal Shakespeare Company's new auditorium, The Swan, which opened in 1986. This year, the Royal Shakespeare Company is in its 50th year, and The Swan is in its 25th year. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Max Stafford Clarke, theatre director and founder of Joint Stock and of Out of Joint. Max is an honorary professor in the School of Theatre and Performance Studies here at Warwick. In the early 1990s, he directed three productions in The Swan: Richard Brome's A Jovial Crew in 1992, William Wycherley's The Country Wife in 1993, and in 1994, Thomas Southern's The Wife's Excuse. Max has generously agreed to talk today about his experiences of working in The Swan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I look back on my three successive years in The Swan with enormous affection. I had been working for 14 years at the Royal Court and working within the strictures and structure of a large company, of which this was only one activity, was a new discipline for me. For example, casting had to be done in conjunction with the other directors working in the season. So you could state your preference, but you wouldn't necessarily get it. So it was interesting to work, as it were, within a different discipline. I mean, when I started work in the theatre 40 years ago, actors were much more accustomed to working in big theatres. And the Traverse, where I began my career, was a hurdle that none of them had experienced before. And the proximity of the audience terrified the actors. Whereas in 1992, the reverse experience had happened. And in the green room at Stratford, overlooking the river, you could see those actors who were going to be performing in The Swan or the other place that night, who looked with relish at their evening's work. Whereas those who were performing in the Memorial Theatre had long faces, because the discipline required to act in a large theatre with voice projection and that demanded epic response both from the design and from the actors was something they were less accustomed to by this time.
The Swan has certainly proved a huge success with actors and directors alike.
It's partly its relationship with the audience.
Absolutely.
Which is, I mean, most actors' initial experience after leaving drama school is in the upper rooms of pubs.
Yes.
And in spaces that weren't originally designed as theatres. The disadvantage of them is that they're not designed as theatres, but the advantage is the proximity and the intimacy that gives. That quality is retained in The Swan, which, you know, the actors are within touching distance, but it also has an epic feel with those big galleries. It's a very human space to work in.
It's quite a challenge for designers, isn't it? Because it's not really a space that's designed, or that's built to take large sets.
Exactly. You have to select the scenic elements you want quite carefully. And also, just like any theatre, it has the soft spot, the spot where, if you're delivering an important exchange or speech, an actor should stand. And finding that soft spot is very important. I was very lucky in having three wonderful designers in successive years. Fatini Dimu, Peter Hartwell and Julian McGowan were both excellent. Even though they were new to The Swan, each of them brought different qualities to the production. Also, I should mention Ian Dury, who wrote the music for Country Wife and for Jovial Crew. The music for Wife's Excuse was in fact written by Purcell, the extraordinary composer. And since there'd only been one ever previous performance of The Wife's Excuse, the musicians were thrilled to be playing a Purcell score that had only ever been heard once in the world before. But Ian was terrific. And the 2 years he was up here were extraordinary. He had a room in one of those cottages by the waterside, and the actors used to congregate there in the evening. I mean, Ian would play the guitar, and Mickey Gallagher on keyboards had a keyboard that was set up on the ironing board, and the actors would be banging waste paper baskets and drumming and or playing guitars along, and could say to their girlfriends on the phone next day, "I was up late jamming with Ian Dury."
Lovely. That's lovely. It's something that happens, isn't it, with the companies working in The Swan. They do form this almost improvisational relationship with each other and with the space. It seems to me to be much more flexible, much more enthusiastic.
Well, the big theatre demands understudies and demands walk-on parts, and actors may well have one or two lines, whereas the work that's done in the and the doubling that certainly I went in for in the three productions at the Swan means that the actors feel a sense of commitment to the work rather stronger because they are so engaged with it.
Yes.
And indeed, the music in particularly Jovial Crew, written by Ian, did demand, you know, the full extent of their singing range as well.
It's quite a challenge.
So that was quite fun, yeah.
One of the great challenges from The Swan has been precisely to do shows that have been either not staged before or very rarely staged, as a way of setting Shakespeare in the Royal Shakespeare Company
in a context,
in a much richer world of his contemporaries.
Well, I succeeded best, I think, with the very first play, which was Jovial Crew, which was first performed in 1640.
Absolutely.
I mean, myth has it that the Puritans closed the theatres, but in truth, the theatres were not supported either by the Royalist faction, who saw them as impudent, cheeky and provocative, or by the Puritan faction, who saw them as unseemly and degenerate. So the theatre had no supporters at the time of the Civil War. And Broome's play is the last recorded play before the professional theatres were closed. Right. Interestingly, I only found out subsequently that a lot of the actors actually joined the Royalist Army. And then after the Civil War was over, Cromwell's regime was very reluctant to reopen the theatre because they were old soldiers. They had a really hard time and indeed opened without permission a number of theatres which were then closed down promptly by the authorities. But the possibility of earning a living departed over the Protectorate period.
Did you choose these plays, or did the company approach you to stage them?
No, the company approached me to stage them. I then said, I think, that The Country Wife was a terrific play and I'd like to do that. And The Country Wife is the only one of the three that is regularly in the repertoire today.
Yes.
And I enjoyed doing that. And again, Ian's music was very lively with that. The Wives' Excuse by Thomas Southern, I evaded the whole Whig question by setting the play rather later, in 1815, in Jane Austen's time. And I think that was rather a mistake. I wish in retrospect that I'd set it in the time it was written. But I was eager to avoid the kind of the distancing that inevitably happens with those costumes.
Yes, and particularly when the plays are not well known, perhaps the distancing is more acute.
But The Wives' Excuse is a late Restoration play, written, correct me if I'm wrong, in I think 1690.
I think you're right.
And that's very late for Restoration, because it's also the date of the Battle of the Boyne.
Yes.
And, of course, just as the king was subsequently there by contract with the people, so the husband was there by contract with the wife. There was no longer a divine right. So it's a very interesting period.
Yes.
But Restoration is, as it were, a convention that is quite tired by this time and is coming to a close. And it wasn't until the great Irish dramatist George Farquhar in 1706, and with his two great plays, The Recruiting Officer and The Beaux' Stratagem, the convention of Restoration plays was finally, as it were, revivified and rearranged.
It was an interesting choice for the Swan to decide to put on, I think, Restoration plays, because their original intention had been to stay with Shakespeare's contemporaries, literal contemporaries. And then I think they realised that the space lent itself to the social manipulation and hierarchies within Restoration drama.
Well, of course,
that the asides worked so brilliantly, talking to the audience.
I was going to say that Restoration plays, quite like Shakespeare, I mean, it can be as many, much as a third of the play is made up of dialogue with the audience.
Yes.
And of course, in theatres of the day, the great chandelier that illuminated the space was over the audience, not over the stage. So it would have been more like a lecture hall in the sense that the actors could see the front rows of the audience as clearly as they could see each other. So dialogue with the audience was of huge importance. And, of course, so were the prologues and epilogues, because they were an opportunity.
And you had a special prologue written, didn't you, for The Country Wife by Stephen Jeffries?
That's right. Well, Stephen had worked with me with The Jovial Crew, and he was engaged to write a prologue for The Country Wife. And his gift for pastiche for that period is very vivid. I think, in fact, that in Jovial Crew, which we edited together, and which he wrote some bridging passages for, We worked out that in the end he wrote between 35 and 40% of the lines.
That's fascinating, actually, isn't it? Being inspired by the space and the company to make a play come alive again for the late 20th century.
Yeah. I remember Adrian Noble, who was the director at the time, gave me, after Jovial Crew, three notes. The job of a director, I'd been an artistic director myself, and you know that, you know, a visiting director, it's important you give keynotes, because actually at that point in the production you can't say, you know, Margaret's totally wrong for that part, recast
start again.
It.
Yes.
You've got to live with what you've got. And Adrian gave me three brilliant notes. One I've forgotten, but one was, you know, that the ending of Jovial Crew was just like the ending of some Shakespeare plays, us this way, you that way, that there is a choice at the end, that some people go down one path, some another, and that you can't avoid the epic moments, so that just as all comedies end in marriage and all tragedies end in death, so you have to celebrate the epic events. There's no point in trying to slide it in as though you were doing the bill. You have to actually celebrate the marriages and the deaths as great occasions.
Yes. Fascinating, isn't it? I just recently was aware of how dependent we are on the Swan for this wonderful, rich repertoire, because since the transformation of the theatres at Stratford, the Swan has, of course, been out of use while they've been transforming the buildings.
Right.
And suddenly our repertoire has become much more limited.
Much more stolid and much more Shakespearean.
Absolutely. I talked to Michael Binnington, who said, how on earth did we ever manage without the Swan? And how dreadful it is when it's not there.
Well, it was ever thus. I mean, Henshaw, who ran the Globe, had to revive Henry V regularly in order to fill the house. Because, you know, patriotism is the lowest common denominator, and that appealed to people's anti-French sentiments.
So you do your Henry V when you have to bring people into the big house.
When it's raining, when it's raining and the weather's bad, you bring in Henry V.
Yes. And the Swan has that wonderful flexibility with a smaller audience.
That's
and
right. That the box office is not such a tyrant in the Swan.
It's perfect. I do hope that it stays this way. I gather that they've made very few changes to the Swan.
I would hope.
But because The Other Place is no longer in its original format, there's no real location for new writing at the moment.
Right.
And so I have a slight worry that the Swan may need to go on fighting its corner to protect its original repertoire.
Yes.
Until at least we get The Other Place back.
It is a very attractive building. My daughter, who was very young at the time and who stayed with me during Jovial Crew, certainly, and I think during The Country Wife too, called it Barbar's Castle, because she had been reading the Barbar books.
Yes.
And the architecture of the Swan with its kind of Victorian Gothic spires looked just like Barbar's Castle.
That wonderful roof, the roof line that dominates the river at that point.
So she would say, are we going Barbar's Castle today, Daddy?
That's nice. And of course, everyone talked about the golden wood inside and the warmth of the space.
Yes.
I think it's a very attractive venue.
Very.
Do you feel it's perhaps helped the audience to become more familiar with Shakespeare in his place? You know, I mean, that these plays have somehow enriched our understanding of Shakespeare's writing.
Well, I think yes. I mean, I think that, say, Jovial Crew and Wives' Excuse, which both of which were unknown plays, were very worth reviving. Mm. On the other hand, they make Shakespeare seem the extraordinary dramatist that he was. I mean, you could say that Shakespeare was a huge influence, but he was also a baleful influence in that people attempted after Shakespeare to emulate Shakespeare. And right through the 19th century, almost every novelist, Conrad, Tennyson, Coleridge, Byron, Shelley, attempt to write tragic plays in blank verse, which of course is like trying to stop the motor car and go back to the horse and cart.
Absolutely.
They don't try and develop their own theatre. I mean, obviously D.H. Lawrence is the exception. But almost every eminent English novelist attempted to write a Shakespearean play with dire results.
Max is here because he is opening his own new show with Out of Joint in our studio in Warwick.
This
Do you want to just
a
comment
dish of
on it
tea
very briefly?
With Dr. Johnson. It's an evening dominated by conversation between Johnson and his biographer Boswell, and is based on two books. Boswell's biography of Johnson and Boswell's account of their trip together to the Hebrides. But we also meet in the course of the evening John Wilkes, George III, Joshua Reynolds, Oliver Goldsmith, Mrs. Thrale and Flora MacDonald, so that all of whom Johnson met in the course of his life. I mean, after Shakespeare, Johnson is the most quoted person. He wrote a play called Irene and the Sultan Mohammed, and his protege, Garrick, put it on to no great acclaim at Drury Lane. So Johnson, Sam Johnson, was one of the first to attempt to emulate Shakespeare. And Johnson's preface to Macbeth, I mean, you realise that Macbeth was a bit like Titus Andronicus now, an almost unperformable play in the 18th century, that it seemed so coarse and so offensive that it was very rarely performed. And Johnson, indeed, said that there were many plays which should be read and not performed. So, in a way, the swan gives the lie to that adage of his. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you very much for coming and talking to us.
Great pleasure.